Hey folks, we are live, and here is the opening music that Walt Revillier told me I have to have. How about that, huh? Okay, this is our Falcon.
You know, one of these days, you have to play that whole thing.
It's like 12 seconds. It just loops, man. It's just, you know.
Okay.
I've
heard all of 2 seconds.
You heard the whole, it's not going to like break down in a second and like some beautiful vocalist comes in. It's just, you know.
Yeah, it's like I'm waiting for the beat
drop
to
the
drop.
Beat.
There's not a dubstep remix, I promise.
Okay.
So, Falcon, Winter Soldier. As I said pre-show, my big hot take is Baron Zemo is Joe Pesci from Lethal Weapon. But what do you guys think? Let's start over here because Mike Miller hasn't been in a while. What do you think, sir?
Well, we talked a lot last episode about Isaiah Bradley and New Avengers and stuff like that. And they released some like set photos and stuff from like the new Ant-Man and Wasp movie and a couple of other things. And like they're totally prepping the game for Young Avengers. They totally, totally are. Like they've got what's her name? Stature is in Wasp and Ant-Man 3. What else is every? There were like Hawkeye in the Hawkeye movie. His daughter, who is their like a you know shooty person. Mm-hmm. So like yeah, they're seeding them throughout the films, and now I strongly suspect we're like that Patriot. We're definitely gonna see Patriot. That's yeah.
Patriot,
young black Captain America in Young Avengers.
Thank you for giving me a good idea for the title for my next action movie screenplay. I'm just gonna call it Shooty Person. So, hey, look who's entering the chat, like Kramer walking in midway through a Seinfeld episode. There's Jason Toundrell. How you doing, Jason?
I'm in.
All right, you're in. Just like a hacker in a 1990s movie. I'm in. All right. Jim, Seals, what do you think? And you stole Steve Shield. I see it behind you on the wall.
I did steal it. Specifically got it from my office at Wonk for the podcast. This episode's written by the creator of the John Wick movies, and I think it shows. And I don't think that's necessarily a good thing.
Yeah, that bit where all the bounty hunters get the alert and they all start shooting, like it's John Wick.
Or the Sharon Carter action sequence later in the episode where she's just doing John Wick stuff.
Yeah.
So you're like a 3 out of 5 on this one, 2 out of 5.
I'm gonna go 2.5. I'll split the difference with you.
Okay, that is fair. Right below Jim, we have Jacob Blackman. Jacob, I'm gonna give you the big screen. Boom. All right. So what do you think about all this?
I was not as excited with episode 3 as I was with episode 2. Holy cow, they did a lot with episode 2, and I had a lot to say about that. Unfortunately, I was not here to talk about that last week, but we're here to talk about episode 3. I am happy they have finally brought in Sharon Carter. We've been waiting for her to show up. I am glad to see them doing a lot of good and interesting things with Baron Zemo. I think he is a fantastic character in the continuing trend of make your villains interesting. I love his motivation because he's not just a haha cackle, I am evil, I want to rule the world villain like he is in the comic. He has a motivation. And he's going to see that through. Considering he was the one villain in the movies that actually succeeded in his plot, it makes Zemo a villain worth note.
Was that note or nut?
Note.
Okay, fair enough. I gotcha. Let me. Wow, I can't get you out of big screen now. Hang on a second.
I am all way too important.
There we go. And last but not least, we have Jason Toundrell. Jason, what do you think, sir?
It was an interesting episode. I agree with Jacob. I was not as into it as episodes 2 or 1. But that was mostly because it seemed like kind of a work, like a working episode. You know, we had a lot of plot. it was, quite frankly, it was kind of a little repetitive. It was like, get on a plane, learn some stuff, get on a plane, learn some stuff, you know? But there's a lot going on, and I find it very interesting. The Zemo that we see in this episode is a very interesting character who seems very different from the Zemo we saw in Civil War. Like I had a hard time kind of getting those two characters to square the circle. I'm delighted to have a rich Baron Zemo who is a walking epitome of rich white privilege in a show about black veterans. You know, like he's a great contrast, a great foil to Bucky and Falcon. But I never thought that the guy we saw in Civil War was a rich Baron of Sokovia, you know. He's a little bit less obsessive and more almost lighthearted, and it's a different take on the character. I'm not saying it's bad, but it does seem very different.
Yeah, my big insight, Jason, you missed in the pre-show, was that he is the Joe Pesci in this Lethal Weapon Cop Buddy movie.
Well, didn't we decide last week that somebody else would be Joe Pesci? Well,
Sharon Carter, but I really think it's Zemo, but I'm open to debate.
So, Sharon, I have a theory. Have we gotten to the theory stages yet?
I briefly touched on Young Avengers theories, and then it was sidelined away.
The show is trying to, now the master of explaining heel and face turns is Mr. Seals. So I'm going to defer to Jim on this. But the show wants us to think that Sharon's a bad guy and that Zemo is not as bad as he appears, right? Now, it's just trying, like, Zemo's a bad guy. He puts on his mask. We think, okay, he's going to run. But then he doesn't run and he helps the heroes escape. And the show is kind of like faking that maybe he's not completely bad. Meanwhile, Sharon gets in the car at the end, and we're made to think that maybe she. And at one point, I think Falcon Sam says, "Yeah, I hate her. I kind of hate her now." Like they set her up as being like a bad guy. I think this is all bullshit, frankly. I think that my theory on Sharon is that Sharon is the CIA's eyes and ears in Madripoor. And the whole bit about how she can't go home is just her cover story. And she had to go along with Sam to do all this because the CIA want the super soldier serum. And then she knew exactly where that guy was. And she knew all that shit. And that's why when Zemo shoots him, she's like, "What did you do?" Like, because they needed that guy. Like, she is totally not for, I don't believe for a minute that she is exiled from America and can't go home. And of course, Zemo will betray them because he better. I mean, he better.
Unless they're setting up Thunderbolts.
Yeah, I also want to give a nice shout out to the episode for finally bringing Madripoor into the MCU, which is nice deep lore of Marvel, because that's a place that's been around for since the mid 80s,
1985, The New Mutants.
Yeah, and just a wonderful place to be for an origin for villains and a place for villains.
So first of all, I was so stoked to see him pull on the mask because, like, Baron Zemo getting the stupid mask loose to his face is like one of the best corny things out of silver, what, I guess gold and silver age Marvel. That was dope. Yeah. That was and Sharon at some point refers to somebody off screen, right? Like right near the end of the episode.
Well, she's on the phone in the limo. She said, "We've got problems, two of them actually."
Yeah. So that was definitely very suspicious. That jumped out at me.
I'm trying to figure out who she might have been talking to, or have we already found out who she was talking to based on who showed up at the end.
I figured it was the driver of the car. That's right. I'm sorry to not read anything fantastic into this, but there's a girl driving the car, and she gets in, and she says, "We've got a couple of problems." Not that she thought she was, that was who she was talking about.
Who is the girl driving the car?
Just an honor, a character. A
person. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't.
We saw
a CIA contact.
I meant was, she sounded like she was going to be talking to someone about it. This is my point.
Let me see. What else?
It probably wasn't Peggy Carter. That seems unlikely.
Yeah. I wish. That was sad that show got canceled. Mm-hmm.
Mike, I'm going to have to burst your bubble here for a second.
Sure, go for it.
Now, I want to note that I love Baron Zemo. He's a great villain. But
and he can dance.
Do not. He, apparently. Guy's got moves.
Let's get that
one. I would not hold your breath for the whole face melted by adhesive X plotline.
I really hope.
Listen. Like in a comic book, you can have multiple bad guys whose faces are scarred and never take off their mask.
Yeah.
But in movies, you only get one at a time. And if you only get one person whose face is scarred and they never take off their mask, we all know who that has to be.
And they've already
got to do.
Yeah.
Right. And if you do that with Zemo first, or if you do it with Zemo as well, it's always going to seem like one of those two characters is a knockoff of the other one.
Did they finally get? Did they got Fantastic Four back? Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. We've seen teasers for a Fantastic Four feature.
Okay. Yeah. I'm still hoping for that glue thing because it's so stupid and lovely.
the whole so many villains who had face melty issues and always wear a mask never sat with me. Yeah. In my personal, whenever I run Marvel as a universe, Baron Zemo doesn't have that issue. You know, Deadpool doesn't. Just looks like regular old Ryan Reynolds. He doesn't look all lumpy and crappy. The only face melty issue person that has a problem is Dr. Doom because it is intrinsic to his character.
He owns that thing.
I've always befolded the interpretation of Dr. Doom where he just has one skull and he's just so vain.
Yeah.
That he wails the giant man. Well, like I never liked the Jim Lee where he had like a column of flesh right in front of his eyeball.
Yeah.
I've always liked the idea that he's so vain.
Yeah.
Just one little cut on his face and he just puts this mask on all the time.
The molten mask.
That Kirby made that explicit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like Kirby said, that's what it is. He's got like one tiny little mark on his face, but he's so vain. And then, Jim, what's the issue, the Fantastic Four issue, where Reed pulls the mask off and Doom sees his face reflected like a million little crystal.
That's a Fantastic Four 200. That's the final fight. That's where they overthrow Dr. Doom from Latveria.
And in that scene, you can see that his face is fine. There's just like this tiny little mark. Mm-hmm. And they duplicate that. But then when Byrne does Doom, you see the scarring around his eyeballs through the metal slits in the mask, which is also super cool looking. I dug that. But yeah. I think ultimately the way to do this is to use both of them, right? Like he starts off that way. He starts off with his face as a small mark, and then at some point during the storyline, he gets scarred.
Yeah. Well, to your point that Baron Zemo is a drastically different character, it did feel like this was like the test run of what a Dr. Doom in the Marvel universe could be. Like, because I agree with you, the idea that his personality seemed to have changed dramatically. Like, this isn't the guy who keeps a cell phone voice message of his dead wife right before, she, you know.
Exactly.
Like, this doesn't feel like the same character.
Yeah.
Like Zemo in Civil War felt sort of like a walking man's hero. Like, he was punching up.
Yeah.
And now that we've given him privilege and we've given him a jet and he's got this cute little butler character who he talks – you know, his Sokovian language to and tell them to feed it to the peasants. Like, now that he's got all these other elements, he loses sort of that everyman kind of like, I was wronged and I'm going to take it out on you.
That's right. Yeah. He's much less identifiable and sympathetic.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he still has a bit of that because, you know, he is a man who lost everything. Yeah, he is a man of wealth and privilege, but, you know, he lost his family. in the initial incident which sparked all this.
Yeah, yeah.
He is a man who no longer has a country, because he mentioned in episode 3. Sokovia doesn't exist anymore. Its territories were chopped up and given to its neighbors.
Yeah, but he seems like he's bounced back pretty well. That's I think what Jim and I are getting at. Like, you're right. And when he was devastated in Civil War, we felt for him.
Yeah.
But now he's like jet setting around the world with his butler drinking champagne. Like, okay, I think he got over it.
Yeah. I mean, he also, as Jacob pointed out, he succeeded in his whole mission, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He told
so, like,
he wanted to tear apart the Avengers. Yeah. He did it.
I did.
So he's a little jovial. I mean, like it does. I'm gonna watch the second Avengers again and get a grip on the character, because like you're right, it was weird, and I totally lost my words.
That was the second Avengers. That wasn't the second Avengers.
Was the Age of Ultron?
That was Civil War.
Yeah.
Okay.
That was Captain America.
Yeah, I like the idea though that he's like celebrating the win. I have something else about this show that I've been thinking about though since last week, and And this show kind of touches on it, because they had that great conversation between Sam and Bucky. And Sam says, you know, I did make a mistake. I should have destroyed that shield. And this is where Buck says, well, maybe I before you destroy it, I'll take it for myself. Now, what's interesting about that is it's planting the seed of a rivalry between the two characters about who's going to take the shield. Now, I don't know how that's going to play out. I'm not going to speculate. But it reminded me of the larger question of why did Sam not take the shield? Because Bucky asks him in episode 2, and Sam does not answer the question. He says, if you or Steve are going to have to just accept that you will never understand this, but I did what I thought was right. And he talks to everybody in the first episode when he gives up the shield, but that's a public thing. That's not a private space where he can be honest. That's what he tells the public. And he's vague about how it's a symbol and it means things and it's associated with a person. Okay. But this show is being very careful about hiding why Sam gave up the shield, because he does not answer the question when Bucky asks him. And I think I have an answer. And the answer is that America has not yet earned a Black Captain America. Oh. That is, he can be Black Captain America, but there is a large percentage of the country that will never accept a Black Captain America. Now, when Obama got elected, we might have deliriously thought in our high that the time had come, that we were past that. We were in a post-racial society, and a Black man could be Captain America, and he could be welcomed and accepted by the country.
Have you read any of the interviews with John Boehner about his new book?
Yeah, I have.
Just how Obama's election led to Fox News being all about the birther conspiracy theory, which led to the current crazy state of, all right.
If there's anything that we have learned from the last 4 years, is that we are not in a post-racial America.
Yeah.
Right? And Sam is like, look, I'm not going to be the Captain America for a country, a small percentage of which, sadly, a too large percentage of which would rather lynch me than have me be Captain America. Like, I'm not going to do it. I will be Captain America when the country has earned a Black Captain America. Right? Now, I think they're waiting for that to pay off. I think there's going to be a moment there where Sam's going to come clean. But that's my theory on why he gave up the shield.
That's kind of dangerous from a storytelling point of view, because you have something that happens in the show where, okay, you know what? America has earned a Black Captain America. And that seems
that's
like
a... That's not going to happen in the show, because that's not the America we live in.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. But then you never get to have Sam as Captain America the way you've had in the comics for a good year or two.
We need to forcibly break ourselves apart here. I know we constantly go back to the comics, but the comics and the show have different requirements. They have different audiences. They're made in a different way. The comic is inspiration, but the show was its own thing.
All right. So I want to briefly touch on this so we don't forget to talk about it later. But wow, the kickback or the blowback on John Walker and the actor and stuff. We need to touch on that later.
Okay.
But
okay.
When we started the show, I was talking about how like in the new Ant-Man movie, they're going to have Stature. In the new Hawkeye movie, they're going to have Hawkeye's kid in costume. Yeah. So like they are totally building up the Thunderbolts. And it's too early now.
You mean Young Avengers?
Young Avengers. I'm sorry. Yeah, Young Avengers. But yeah, it's too early now. But I really feel like, what do you think the chances are Bucky's gonna take that shield and give it to to Patriot.
I would not. That's a great.
That's what I'm saying. It's early. It's early.
What if he gives it time. What if he gives it to Elijah?
Yeah.
Like Peyton. The son has only had one line so far, right?
Exactly.
He might become Patriot, but I think it's a great idea. I had not thought of that. But if I was writing this, that's a serious move. I like that. I like giving it to Elijah.
What I could see happening is he gives it to Isaiah.
That's what I meant, Isaiah.
And Elijah picks it up.
Is Elijah the son?
He's like, I can do this shit. Yeah, Elijah's the son.
Yeah, he'll probably give it to, I like to have you giving it to Isaiah because he knows Isaiah. Yeah.
That's a good point, Jacob. That is probably the right... we're going to see that in 3 episodes.
So there's a lot to unpack here. I'm going to deviate from Jason a little bit.
Yeah.
On your reading, because in that same episode, I watched episodes 2 and 3 in a sitting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Today.
Yeah.
As I was tweeting about it, in that same episode where he says, you and Steve just have to accept that I did what I thought was right.
Yeah.
There was that exchange with the child on the side of the street. And he's like, hey, it's Black Falcon. And he's like, no, it's just Falcon.
Yeah.
And then he goes, what are you, black kid?
That's right.
It's a great little fun little exchange. It's a commentary on the superhero naming scheme, like Black Knight, Lightning and other Black Panther,
Black Knight.
Like that. Mm-hmm. And.
Oh, I got it. Okay.
Yeah, I got it.
What it sort of encapsulates here is that I don't think Sam wants to be defined as Black Captain America.
That's right. I agree.
That's what he would be labeled the moment. That's what the comic community, when he was Captain America, he was Black Captain America in the discourse.
Yeah.
And I think Sam, by refusing the call to action, which is what he does when he gives up the shield, and now he's gone to the point where maybe I should destroy the call to action because it's fallen into other hands that I don't quite trust, that I don't quite agree with.
Yeah.
It's sort of distancing itself from just being, instead of being Captain America, instead of being labeled Black Captain America. To your point of face heel tones, I'm reminded of, it happened in the 80s. There was an athlete, Pistol Pez Whatley, and he was a good guy, and he was a buddy of Jimmy Valiant, until Jimmy Valiant said he was the best black athlete ever. Okay. And he's like, no, I'm not the best black athlete. I'm the best athlete.
Yeah.
And that's what made him tone and fight Jimmy Valiant. So I'm kind of thinking that that's sort of the dynamic of defining himself on his terms as opposed to everyone else defining who Sam is.
I buy all that. William Foster is a black comic scholar. He's written extensively about black heroes, superheroes in comics. And it's great because, of course, his name is William Foster, which means he has the same name as Giant Man.
Yeah.
He's Bill Foster. But William Foster has this wonderful joke that he told me once when he said, look, the perfect name for a black superhero of the 70s and 60s was Black Black. he was right. So that's what I thought of when Sam had that sequence with the kid. Like, are you black kid? No, you're just kid, right? And that was the writers trying to make a point. You can't be a black superhero without being identified as being black in your name, right? Like, that's still your distinguishing feature. And it shouldn't be like that. It shouldn't be like that. And Falcon is not Black Falcon. He's just Falcon. Yeah. So, yeah, I get what you're saying, Jim.
And to your point, John Stewart, the second Green Lantern, was originally named Jefferson Washington or something like that.
Yes, that's
right. It was Neil Adams who was like, that's a slave name. You can't actually use that name.
Do that, yeah.
Let's come up with something else.
Yeah. And then that Green Lantern is the Green Lantern a whole generation of kids grew up with watching Justice League.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And they were like, Green Lantern's black. He's always been black. And then Ryan Reynolds comes out and everyone's like, who the hell's that guy?
Right? Yeah.
It's the boomer hand is heavy on comics, and it just kind of forces that comics nostalgia, back at us. It's always gonna be Hal Jordan for somebody.
Yeah.
It's and poor oh god.
Aren't they doing a Justice Society America thing? Are we not getting that?
There's
Stargirl, like,
yeah, the Stargirl show,
which is really good, by the way.
There is a Justice Society animated movie coming out soon.
Oh yeah,
Justice Society World War II comes out at the end of the month.
A lot of the JSA characters are in Black Adam. We know that Dr. Fate is in Black Adam. Red Tornado is in Black Adam.
Do we know if we're going to see original Green Lantern in Black Adam?
I don't know. Okay. But let's get back to the show. Mike, you want to talk about the blowback first? Because then I want to get
right. Yes, like you talked about, yeah, like villainization of Sharon Carter, which is like feels like a flashbang grenade. I think you're right. I think it's just
cut poor Wyatt Russell.
Yeah, but yeah, that actor, like, I'm even further convinced about my theory that they want us to hate that guy. It's like, whoa. Apologies to you, dude. You're doing a great job playing the role that you were told to play the way you're supposed to do it. I'm sorry that people are threatening your life. That sucks. Yeah. But you're killing it out there. So, you know, mixed bag.
Not my Captain America, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Captain America. He's U.S. agent.
He's not U.S. agent yet.
Yeah, not yet. They haven't gone. Yeah, yeah. And then, I don't know. They it was weird because, like, we just very briefly saw him, and we just saw him, like, pop off on some dude, and, like, that was it for the episode, right? Or did he get another shot at the end?
It was only the first little bit that he showed up.
Yeah, he gets spit on, and honestly, like, the worst part of that is that he had to read the line, "Don't you know who I am?" Yeah. Like, oh, come on. Like, that, there is no line more desperate than for John Rogers say, "Don't you know who I am?" Like, you can't do this to me. I'm an American. Like, yeah. they're writing him to be unlikable.
So if you know who I am, go get your manager.
Exactly.
Yeah. A little clarification. He does pop up at the very end with Battlestar.
Yeah.
And they have a conversation where it's clear that they're going to go rogue for the next episode. Like, they get some information as to what happened, and Zemo
Is out. Yeah, they found it. They found out.
Like, okay, well, no one's going to care how we do it, just as long as we get the job done.
Classic ends justify the means, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Which Steve would never do.
Yeah, it's perfect U.S. agent right there.
Now you did comment something, Jason, about divorcing the comics from the show. And I think those are yes and no to that for me. Because the show is also drawing so much from the Mark Grunwald, Mark Waid run. Yeah. Like, this Sharon Carter is the Sharon Carter I wanted since they announced she was going to be in Winter Soldier as Agent 13. Yeah. Like, this is the cynical Sharon Carter who was left for dead by Nick Fury, and he's back, and she's pissed.
Yeah.
Like, she's angry at Cap. Yeah. Like, this is that characterization. So I don't know if she's necessarily going to be a bad guy. I think she's going to be a foil, and she's going to show up at some point to be a plot complication.
Yeah.
I don't know necessarily if she's going full bad guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, if she's a CIA agent, she can be that neutral foil, right? She can be that gray figure who's neither good nor bad, because it's the CIA, right? Like, they're routinely. There was a wonderful Twitter thread about the portrayal of therapy in this show, about Bucky's therapist and how terrible the therapy is that he's getting. And one good example of it is the fact that he's got this amends list. Okay. But he didn't do those things. I mean, he physically did them, but he had no choice. He's not responsible for killing all those people. That was mind control, right? And a good therapist would be working on him understanding that. But of course, the show is not interested in portraying good therapy. That's not the point. The point of the therapist is not to be realistic. The point of the therapist is to highlight Bucky's psychological problems and provide comic relief. And so therapy is done in a very inaccurate way.
Yeah, therapists would never throw anything at you, like, ever.
Yeah, it makes people that are actually, it creates a very bad impression of therapy, and it scares people away from getting therapy, and that's bad. But you can see why it's written like that.
Yeah. Here's the issue I have with the therapy.
Yeah, thing. Good.
I can absolutely see how, according to his the part of his parole he would be expected to participate in therapy given what happened. However, he shouldn't be having these issues at all. The mental conditioning that he went through at Wakanda to eliminate all the stuff in there was supposed to take care of all of that.
I don't know, that seems a little too easy. You're saying, well, that means there should be no drama. And I kind of...
No, I'm not saying there's drama. I'm saying that he should be doing the amends thing on his own and not part of his therapy.
Yeah, I could see that being like overly responsible.
Yes.
Yeah. No, that makes some sense.
I think what the show is trying to do is just say that recovering from trauma is not a linear progression.
Yeah.
Like he may have been at peace in Wakanda. He may have been able to find, you know, a center there. But when he's being reintroduced into New York City life, and he's revisiting all his old haunts from when he was, you know, a young man.
Yeah.
I think, like, to your point, I do think there should be something said about the Wakanda recovery, but I think it should be given a context of, you know, just because you get over a trauma doesn't necessarily mean it doesn't revisit you.
Yeah.
We got the White Wolf call out, I think, in episode 2, right? Yeah. And of course, we have a Wakandan presence at the end of the third episode. I would love for a chance to do some unpacking and some world building and help us to understand exactly what Bucky's life in Wakanda was like. I would like that show. Mm-hmm.
Can we just say that maybe all entertainment is irresponsible the way they handle mental health and therapy especially?
Yeah, I mean, there's a rare exceptions that probably prove the rule, right? Like, there's got to be some show out there that shows therapy in a realistic and healthy fashion. I just don't know what it is.
I mean, it's used more as a delivery mechanism for character development, which, I mean, is fine, but it doesn't, I mean, if you're a person who really is thinking about therapy, well, maybe TV's convincing you it's a bad idea.
What I loved about this particular author, and she was also a therapist, is that she explained why the therapy is so bad. That the therapist is just checking off boxes on a checklist to get Bucky back approved for action as quickly as possible. In other words, like the writers are writing therapy to do this for reasons, and they're not interested in portraying it realistically. But if you think about it as this is the therapy that would be given by a therapist who doesn't really give a shit and is just putting in the clock hours, it actually kind of makes sense.
And they kind of validate that too, because she's like, I was a soldier. I know what it's like. And I'm still taking orders from the army. So get the hell back out there.
Maybe so.
And also, the therapist's role in the story is to get a very introverted character to talk.
That's right. That's right.
Like, that's the whole gimmick that he just stares at things. Like, he's not telling you he's computing. You know, they make that joke in the second episode. Yeah. But he's not sharing what he thinks. And it's to get that moment in episode 2 when he has the breakthrough and he goes, you know, if Cap was wrong about you, he's wrong about me.
Yeah.
And at that point, and that's where Falcon also, like, that's the second call to action for him, is he should have reached out. Like, because that was, like, Bucky in that chair, he's leaning forward, he's open, he's vulnerable. Yeah. And that's when Sam should have.
Yeah.
Yeah. Move forward and gave him some emotional support, and maybe they could have healed that with. Instead, he pulls back. Yeah. He looks at the therapist. He makes it that joke that you mentioned, Jason.
Yeah.
And then he bounces.
Yeah.
And it leaves Bucky in an emotional place where he's exposed, and now the power dynamic is different, and there's not a give and take anymore in the rest of that episode. And even this episode suffers from that.
Yeah, I agree.
Any speculation for next week?
I mean, I feel pretty strongly that the Patriot stuff is going to – I think we're going to see some more stuff with the Isaiah Bradley and Elijah. And also wondering what happened to, like, Bucky's romantic leader, if that was, like, just seriously a quick one-off for us to ingest the list.
I think we've introduced a Wakandan character. She's here for Zemo.
Yeah.
That seems like a pretty obvious plot. We're still in the middle of this storyline, so maybe Carter comes back. They're still in Madripoor. And also the plot thread of that you guys brought up already with Walker and Battlestar going off book, right? So that seems like an obvious plot hook, but ultimately we have, there's still room for one big reveal in this show, either at the end of four or the beginning of five, some big twist. I don't think we're gonna get a Red Skull connection to Flag Smasher, for example. A lot of us speculate on that at the beginning of the show, but that doesn't seem to be supported by any of the evidence. But something on that scale, like there's room for one big, you know, mind screw moment left in the show.
Well, the Power Broker reveal.
Yeah, they talk about the Power Broker, but we don't see them. One theory is that Sharon Carter is the Power Broker. But I think a lot of us are just, we fell for that Mephisto gag too hard on WandaVision, and we're like trying to read big stuff into this, and I don't know if it's there.
I'm taking a page from Mr. Blackmon's book, and I'm not speculating. I'm just taking the show as it is and commentating on the politics that they introduce. There's one last thing before we wrap up the episode.
Yeah.
I love the idea that Isaiah Bradley is the Henrietta Lacks of the Super Soldier program.
Yeah.
The idea that his cells are being used against his knowledge and that's has right. now given us another generation, like 20 Super Soldiers because of him. And that was the breakthrough and not whatever the heck Banner was doing with gamma radiation.
That's a great analogy, because I've been thinking about Isaiah and the Tuskegee experiments, but you're right. Like for those of you that are watching and don't know, Henrietta Lacks, she had cancer cells taken from her body without her knowledge or permission. And much of our, is it cancer medication, cancer treatment?
Yeah, it's immunization.
Yeah, evolved from the use of Henrietta Lacks' cells. When I was a professor, I actually taught that book, and a member of the Lacks family came and spoke to our students, and I learned all about it. And that, you're right, it's totally a Lacks thing.
And the Tuskegee experiment is still valid. Like that's still a thing that we can draw from, because we don't know what the experimentation was used to get to that point that Nigel or whatever his name was able to move it forward.
Oh, and that reminds me. Do you remember the woman that we saw dying this episode? Right. Mm-hmm. When Flag Smasher goes to her and says, "I'm sorry."
Okay, yeah.
I'm betting my money that she is a victim of the super serum, that when the girl took 20 of these capsules and there's only like 8 of them, that's because the other dozen have all died.
Oh,
and I don't think there's actually any serum left, or maybe there's one and most of them have all been used. And I think that's how that woman died. That's why Flag Smasher called that scientist for help. Because that's the guy, because she was, the girl was, the dead person was reacting badly to his serum.
So can we all agree there's not going to be a Chris Evans cameo at any point in this show?
Yes. It is unlikely.
I think it would ruin the message of the show.
Yeah.
Like icons don't get to speak. Icons don't get a voice. It's whatever we as the viewer ascribe to the icon that gives it its power. So if Steve is the perennial icon of this show and we have two characters struggling with their relationship to Steve and then everyone else struggling with the relationship to Cap, Steve can't have a voice.
Yeah.
I wouldn't rule out like a flashback using some footage cut from elsewhere, but I don't think we'll see any new performance from Chris Evans in here. We might get like something where like he jumps over a tank or something in a World War II flashback.
Past
that.
Old man Steve has surrendered his right to get involved in all this shit. You know, like he decided to get a life. Okay, so he chose the life of a private citizen rather than being the life of a superhero. That's his right. But now he has to live with that choice as much as everybody else does.
Yeah.
He's surrendered his voice.
I don't want to get on my hobby horse about what happened to Kyle Rayner and why is it always Hal Jordan who's Green Lantern, but... I won't do that. But I mean, it's a much better story if Captain America steps down and someone else, Sam, Bucky, whoever, becomes Captain America for another generation. I mean, if it was comics, though, that wouldn't happen. They're going to de-age Steve somehow, and he'll be back in the mix in a year or two. But I don't see it happening in the live action.
Yeah. I've said this before, but I think that's one of the things that I like about the cinematic universe is that because actors age and contracts end, the films can change in ways that the comics are very reluctant to do for reasons of sunken costs and inertia, right?
Yeah, like, I do think this is a trial run for how the Marvel Cinematic Universe is going to go forward in the next 10 years.
I love this partnership between the films and the television shows.
Mm-hmm. It's nice I got it working finally, because for a while it was kind of dysfunctional.
Did you guys see the Loki?
Oh,
I've not.
Yeah, the Loki trailer would look fun.
It looks so great! And the time variance authority and there's just so much shit going on in that. I
love Excited Jason. It's the best.
You know, I was not that personally looking forward to the Loki series. It was just like another yawner for me. And then I saw the trailer and I'm like, holy shit, this looks good.
Do you guys want to watch it now? Or we can save it for next time? Or
Let's save it for the trailer show that we have coming up.
You mean the movie show. Okay, yeah, we can do that. So, hey, I'm going to do a hard segue with no meaningful transition. Are you guys ready?
Yes.
Mike Mylar, you got a very successful Kickstarter right now. Why don't you tell us about it?
I do. If you go to epic5e.com, you can...
Boom, we're there.
Away and, oh, snap. Yeah, it funded very quickly and continues to fund very quickly. Normally, Kickstarters do this U thing, right, where you make a third of whatever you're going to make in the first 3 days, mm-hmm. a week. And then you make a third in the last 3 days / a week. And then the middle is just this long, slow U. And that's not what happened. It's more like this. Mm-hmm. And it's terrifying. But no, it's great. We unlocked one stretch goal already. So everybody who pledges will get a free adventure for 21st level characters called Epic Adepts. And I'm working out another stretch goal adventure with a... I'm going to say his name wrong because I never say it. Tiago? Is that how you say it? With the T-H-I-A-G-O? Tiago Rosen. He's a great guy I'm working with on Level Up 5th Edition. And he pitched me a great adventure for 22nd level characters, which we'll unlock probably in a week. And then maybe we'll have a third stretch goal for a 23rd level adventure by the time we're done in like 2 weeks.
What's your total at?
I have not looked since we started. Was it 12,900 and something before the podcast started?
That's fantastic. So 13 grand. That's awesome.
Yeah, we gained another 50 some dollars, so we're almost at 13,000. Yeah, it's going great.
Oh, wait, you just picked up a few more, so yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Oh, my God. It's hard to do anything because I just keep refreshing.
It's that Banff push, man.
It's that Banff podcast boost.
Yeah, I pledged on day one, so you're
right. You're a hero. You're a champion, man. It's one of the first books I put out that doesn't have any Jacob Arden. I feel bad.
Well, there's always
maybe you can make it a stretch goal.
Hire me to do art for some of the adventures.
Yeah, maybe I got to get a elemental swarm army. I think I got to get the author to confirm some details first.
Okay,
but maybe yeah, I got to get something else wrote it.
Okay. I need an epic level mimic.
You know, I have some stuff like that from Mists of Akuma. Maybe for the 23rd level adventure, we'll see.
What is a mimic that high in level pretend to be?
A castle, boat,
planet,
yeah. A Vorpal sword, maybe.
Okay, here's how you do an epic level mimic. You have a high level doppelganger assassin with a mimic sword that drinks blood. That is also a vampire and drinks blood.
Yeah.
His armor is a mimic. His shield is a mimic.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's templates. Like
I'd be very tempted to make a warehouse.
Yeah, that was what I was thinking, a warehouse.
Yeah.
I had a modern adventure I was going to write about mimics. There's like a mimic master who like runs the mimics like a beast master. He's just setting up all these Coleman coolers around town in bad neighborhoods with signs to say free tacos.
So when you say warehouse, is this a place where you store things, or is this a house that when it bites people they become houses?
Yeah, something like that, like a guy who just like becomes a house that is ravenous whenever the moon is high and then spreads the house lycanthropy.
Mm-hmm. Nice. It's a gazebo.
Oh, yeah, you can work the gazebo in, that's true.
Yes.
Oh, hey, Jacob, we have some relevant art, don't we?
Probably.
Do we?
Yeah, you did a Dread Gazebo like 5 or 6 years ago.
Well, I was just thinking of the term, comedic, the general theme of comedic
Mimics. I've done so many mimics. I've lost count of what mimics I've drawn.
I was going to say, I have like two or three Jacob mimics in my archive.
Yeah, he's Mike's had me draw like a wagon mimic. I've done a couple of house mimics. He had me do a pistol mimic.
We got so many mimic monsters in Starfinder, we had to put up a house rule that we would not allow any more new ones.
Oh,
a mimic starship.
Exactly. Yeah, a mimic starship. Yeah.
I've done a starship mimic.
Yeah. I think the last one was the midship mimic, which is like a piece of, like it's like a like your reactor or a part of the ship is actually a mimic. Yeah.
That's dope.
Human that mimics. Is crazy stuff. All right. Well, I think we should wrap things up.
I just have one thing I want to say.
Go for it.
Wyatt Russell does not deserve any of the hate. He is a fine actor. Yeah. And if you are one of those people who hates on someone because they have taken over a role that you adore, you are not a fan. Yeah. Wyatt Russell is an amazing actor, and if you don't believe me, go watch Overlord, which is an amazing movie, and he's great in it.
That is true.
Plus, he's legacy. He's a legacy actor who is playing a legacy role, and it doesn't get any better than that.
And he's doing a great job playing the role. Like, the fact that you hate him is like they want that. Like, they didn't put him out there to be like, love this dude. They could have done that. The lighting would be different. The way his face, you wouldn't smirk all the goddamn time. Yeah. Like, they want you to dislike this character.
He's supposed to be an ass.
He's a threat.
U.S. Agent is an unlovable man.
But we're in the middle of the show. He's gonna, a testament to the quality of the actor. Is he's going to flip this character by the end. He's going to make us, like, the reason why the writers are making us dislike him now is so that the turn is all the better in episode 6, right? When they do something so that we begin to sympathize, feel sorry for him. And I'm waiting for the moment when he decides what he's going to do.
You guys ever heard of the bitter?
The bitter what? Oh no!
We lost you, Mike.
Yeah. What do we? Oh, he's there. The bitter what?
Hey, am I back now?
Yeah. Yes, you're back now.
Oh, there was a book called The Bitch on the Prairie by the poor little girl who had to play Nellie Olson in Little House. And we didn't have internet back then, but wherever she went, she was very recognizable with that blonde hair in her face, and people just treated her terribly because she was designed to be, you know, the J.R. Ewing of Little House on the Prairie. You hated her, and you loved it when Laura Ingalls triumphed over her. And you know, I was back in the 70s, and people don't really change. So, yeah. So, any speculation for next time? We're going to just leave that off and just enjoy the show for what it is, like Jacob does.
We've launched our speculation already.
Blackman and do not speculate.
This is Zenos Blackman. Anyone want to see the Starship Mimic? I found the art.
Yeah, hit it.
Okay, sure.
You can't tease it and not show it.
And that's what she said. Sorry, that was bad. 1 second. Hey, it's animated. How about this?
That's dope.
Yeah, what artistic genius put that cockpit in and animated that. That's amazing. So, anyway, that's Jacob's Starship Mimic. It's hoping for more oohs and ahs, but it's okay, guys. I don't feel hurt or anything. Anyway, to our listeners and viewers out there on the internet, thanks for checking us out. And we'll see you next week for Falcon and Winter Soldier Episode 4 reaction.
Right on.
Bye.